And welcome to the program on this finally Friday. Meteorologist Justin Storm alongside Ag Director Bridger Riedel. This is Weather and Ag in Focus. Well, we took Dean and we kicked him aside yesterday. Kicked him so hard he flew all the way down to Arizona somehow. Apparently it wasn't hot enough here and he wanted to be more miserable down there. So off he went to 113 degree heat. But it's all right, everybody. It's a dry heat.
So I'm told.
Yeah, oh, well. I don't care. We'll enjoy the trip. Hot is hot.
Yes, exactly. So, Justin.
Bridget.
Okay, I can't even wait to ask the questions here regarding weather. So, we are now at a Category 4 hurricane. That's the situation?
It was when it made landfall. Now it's just a tropical storm. It's just a little spinny boy instead of a big spinny boy like it was last night.
Oh. Okay. How far north is this going to impact? As in, should I get an umbrella? What's the potential here for me? I'm worried about me.
the only thing you need an umbrella for is blocking the sunshine out there. It's a dry heat kind of day here in the tropical Red River Valley, 71. Well, I think it's a little warmer than that. It's actually a temperature from about an hour ago. We're probably working our way through the lower 70s now. We'll just refresh that 73 here in Fargo with 7-mile-an-hour winds out of the north. So it's a fairly nice, mild, fall-like day out there, even though temperatures are more like a cool summer afternoon right now, Bridget. But in terms of how far north is this going to affect, this is currently affecting the Ohio River Valley and even just on the east side of Illinois. So they're getting some rain almost all the way up to Michigan from this tropical storm now.
Well, I don't know that that was terribly surprising once you start to see that type of spinny thing, like you said,
spinny
on the
boy.
Radar. You know where he's going. Mm-hmm. Overall, I haven't been on social media as much to see what's happening this morning as far as damage and so forth, but it was some pretty strong winds. I heard, pretty much the 70-mile-an-hour wind situation, even in Georgia.
Yeah, they had some pretty good strong winds. I haven't seen exactly what the strongest winds were that have made it inland outside of some of the reports that were coming in last night as I was watching it make landfall. And it hit as a Category 4 with a central pressure of 938 millibars. For reference, that is low. Our standard atmosphere is 1,013, so if we're down at 930, that's a pretty big number to split. The deeper or the lower that number is compared to the surrounding area, the faster your winds are. That's actually how you get wind, is from pressure differences. So the greater the differences between two locations over some distance, the stronger your winds will always be between there. So a 938 hurricane making landfall in the just south of Perry, Florida, was enough to produce sustained winds of 140 miles an hour. That puts it in a mid-Category 4 setting. We'll see how much more that changes as more data comes available through the coming months.
All right. So as a weather guy, is this as exciting as anything else that goes on in the news? Like, were you glued to the TV last night watching all of the hurricane reporting, et cetera? Or is it not as big a deal?
I mean, I don't know. I've never, I think hurricanes are cool and very interesting and whatnot, obviously outside of the destructive nature of them, but just how they work, their behavior, and the how they function, I think is very interesting. But I don't know, it's never really been my ideal cup of tea, I guess. I guess you could say I get off more on just a good summertime supercell thunderstorm that comes ripping through and throwing baseballs across the room. But no, it's very interesting. I was watching it last night. It made landfall. It's official landfall. I don't know the exact thing, but it was about 11:30 Florida time, 10:30 our time here in Central Time Zone. And there was a lot of video that was coming through on social media, Twitter. And if you want to check out some of that social media, you can obviously search it yourself, or you can go to our website, wdayradionow.com. Click on the weather tab. I threw an article up last night as Hurricane Helene was making landfall at about 10:30 Central Time. So there's some social media stuff on there, a few videos of people that were didn't take the risk seriously enough and decided to stay back. So you can kind of see what was going on just before that thing made landfall. Note to self, it's pretty nasty.
I would have to say. And like you said, it lost its the wind out of its sails, so to speak, rather quickly. Once it made landfall, things started to calm down a little bit, perhaps.
Yeah, it dropped from a Category 4 to a Category 1 by the time it crossed the panhandle into Georgia. Not to say a Category 1 isn't a destructive storm, but it's not a Category 4.
Yep, and so I've also already gotten notifications from cattlemen's organizations letting folks know that if they need to relocate herds, if they are if they have a loss of feedstocks, et cetera, that there are plenty of folks out there who are rallying around ready to deliver when needed. And there's also a whole fleet of electrical linemen waiting to get out there because they know that with all sorts of power outages, their time is going to be needed real quick. So a lot of things going on to try to recoup from that, even though the storm isn't exactly over yet. People are already poised and ready to go.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, this thing is reaching far up here. So when you're looking at here, the storm is much larger than this, but I'm picking individual radar sites for those watching our live stream. And you can see just the magnitude of this storm. I mean, it's reaching from areas of Kansas and Arkansas, Missouri and Arkansas, all the way up towards Ohio and then back into the Carolinas. Still some outer bands out there producing tornadoes in North Carolina. All of this green right here, these are flash flood warnings and emergencies that have been issued up and down the eastern side of the Appalachians from, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, West Virginia. I mean, it's all just highlighted green, and that's from the 10 to 20 plus inches of rain that was expected to fall through those areas due to a process called orographical lift. Basically, what happens is you have all this super rich, moist air, these rainstorms, and they get pushed up the mountains, and as they do so, it gets the air cools as it gets higher in the atmosphere. Cold air can't hold as much moisture as warm air can, so it wrings all that water out like a sponge on the east side of those mountains, and you just get torrential downpours, flash flooding. I've heard of a couple of dams that have failed. It caused immediate emergency evacuations downstream of some of those towns in North Carolina. So just a very ugly thing happening now in portions of the East Coast. Florida's in recovery mode right now. Storm's done for them, but it's all pickup at that point. I'll try and switch my screen here for a moment if I can get some satellite imagery of it as well. I got one of them tabs up here somewhere. I got about 50 of them right now. So let me see if I can do this quick.
Hey, when major weather events happen, it's not every day we get to talk about a hurricane and these types of things, right?
No, it's definitely not. So here is, we want regional, whatever. We're going to get a global disk. So there is our hurricane right now, post-hurricane tropical storm Helene ripping through the eastern half of the United States. And I might be able to go back far enough to, you can watch the whole thing unfold.
Well, like you said, the Ohio River Valley getting that moisture, that actually helps the entire Mississippi River system, which has been low on water and has been a problem for barge traffic. So this gives them a short-term relief anyway if they get some more moisture there. It's not going to restore where they're at from those significantly low levels, but it will help.
Yeah, definitely. Well, so if you have any questions on the hurricane, the weather in general, or anything else that we're going to talk about throughout the course of the hour, feel free to join our conversation, 701-293-9000. That's the Red Wing Shoe line again, 701-293-9000. Emails for the program, that's weather@flagfamily.com. Bridget's personal phone number, that's 218. Oops, sorry, not supposed to put that one in there. Or our live chats on Facebook and YouTube Live. You can chat away in there, especially if you, I know we do have some listeners that are out there, and I think that Steve was actually expecting a little bit of possible showers in New Jersey from the remnants of this hurricane today or tomorrow. So if Steve is listening, he can chime in what the weather's like over there in New Jersey based on what's happening with the hurricane ripping its way through the East Coast right now. I think Dirk is up there as well, isn't he?
He's over east as well. You mentioned, or my question yesterday was, how far north have hurricanes made landfall? And Steve did reply to me after the show, and he said that New Jersey has seen hurricanes in 2011 and 2012.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've definitely reached up there. I think it's New York or maybe... I don't think Maine has ever had a landfall. I think it's about New York area, about as far north, but I could be wrong. And we're defining this as hurricanes. This could be, you know, post-hurricanes or tropical depressions or something like that. But in terms of just a straight-up Category 1 or stronger hurricane, I don't believe anything has made landfall further north than that. But I could be wrong. I probably am wrong.
Okay. We'll find out soon enough. How's that? Mm-hmm.
There's some more homework we'll have to dig into. Anyway, let's see. What do we got coming up on the show today? Do you want to add something, Bridget?
Oh, I'm making all the notes for today. And one of the things that we're going to do is we have two of our guests that are joining us. They've been on with us before. And that would be Jason and Larry. They go by the hashtag Tillage Tuesday on Twitter. And folks have asked me questions such as, wait, what's tillage and why would you have no-till? Well, those guys are going to help answer that. Plus, we're going to have them give us a little bit of insight into what's looking like in the cropping systems in a couple different places in North Dakota, the north central part of the state, and then also to the western half. So we're going to do that. We have plenty of headlines, and we're going to make sure that we cover all the weather when we come back. So stay tuned. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thanks for having us in with you today. I think there's a lot of folks that are out there in their tractors and combines who can't hardly wait to listen just because of the fame and fortune of the guests that are going to be joining us. But before we get to that, I want to say a big thank you to the sponsors who have been a part of our Here We Grow project. We are custom farming 20 acres of corn north of Glendon, Minnesota. Project's coming right along. Justin and I were in the field on Tuesday. That means there'll be a new video coming up pretty quick. And our corn looks great. Thanks to Pivot Bio. They were there to help us out throughout the season as far as our nitrogen source was concerned. And also to Foltz Buildings. If you are interested in creating a new shop, shop/house, cabin, anything in particular, machine sheds and all, Foltz Buildings can help make your dreams come true. Give them a call. Today, we have with us a couple of guests, and it's a lot of coordination because we have folks in various places. Justin's in Grand Forks County. I'm in Cass. We have Larry from Tillage Tuesday joining us from Morton County, and we have Jason from Ramsey County. So we're covering all pieces of the state in a variety of ways. And folks, how are all of you today?
Doing well, Bridget. Doing well.
Say thanks. Okay, good. Just wanted to make sure. Okay, so I actually had this question this morning from someone in anticipation of the both of you being on air with us. And that question was, what's the difference between tillage and no-till? So, all right, Jason, can you define tillage? And I'm going to ask Larry to define no-till as how you see it in your neck of the woods.
Sure. It will depend on who you're talking to, but after harvest, you probably have a couple steps that people will use. I have some people who, as Larry will define no-till, they do that, and all they do is harrow. So think of it as like you're taking a lawn rake across your lawn to pick up the clippings, to get the clippings off the field, all that residue. And then you might get into situations where you use some primary tillage like a chisel plow, or you might use some vertical tillage where you're trying to get that field blackened up so that in the springtime, those fields will warm up, or in our case up here in Ramsey County, we're going to dry out, which opens you up to, there's benefits and negatives to pretty much everything, but you're going to kind of work those fields and get them black in preparation for next season.
All right. So, Larry, on the flip side of that, what's happening in a no-till situation?
Well, in a no-till situation, you won't be doing, in most cases, any type of tillage. You'll be dependent on herbicide application to keep the weeds under control. And then you'll really want to manage your residue at harvest time, spreading that residue out as best you can. There's strip till on occasion, which I'm certainly not opposed to. I think that works out pretty well for row crops, and that's just simply putting a little strip through the field that's open, you're probably putting phosphate or nitrogen down at the same time, and you're prepping the field that way, but you preserve most of the residue, which helps you to hold on to moisture. So it's a way of really conserving moisture, because that, in my career, has been the biggest issue to growing crops more often than not, is just having enough moisture to get it through the season.
Now, both of you are agronomists in the state. Larry works specifically with seed, Jason Moore in the overall agronomist capacity, looking at fields in total and slightly different. When I say that you are part of Tillage Tuesday, it means that's a discussion that you both have consistently on Twitter, talking about the pros and cons of tillage. And so I'm going to start with Larry first. When you think about using a no-till system this year, especially with the spring we had, are you finding that your crop was at an advantage or a disadvantage going through the season?
Well, this year with a cooler, wet spring, you could probably say you were at a little more of a disadvantage initially, trying to get it to warm up, trying to get field conditions so you could do a good job seeding. It's like any system, there's going to be drawbacks to it. But still, for the area of the state I cover, which is the western half, it's pretty important to try to preserve as much moisture as you can, because at some point you will get dry. It's going to happen. But I would say this year, it was probably a little more of a disadvantage to try to get things going.
So, Jason, same question to you. Being in Ramsey County, was as fields that had tillage, did they have an advantage throughout what we saw early on in the growing season, and how does it affect it now? Or did you see some no-till advantages?
So we had a very unique situation. We're generally in the opposite spectrum that Larry deals with, where he's trying to preserve it. We're generally trying to get rid of it. Other than 21 and 23, okay? I have some clients that utilize no-till, and that shined in those dry years, and it does exactly what you're supposed to do. Those same clients this year were at a major disadvantage, because everybody will talk about the amount of rain that we had when the actual major problem was the lack of heat that we had. So we had anything that was in corn stalks this year was extremely cold. It took forever in a week. So we got more our rain and moisture in the fall of 23, and we had some guys that went out and worked fields. And there was two things that happened. They had the most wind erosion because of our open winter in 24, but they also had the biggest advantage in the crops that they grew this year because the ground was black and could warm up. So there's this trade-off that often happens this year, but it was very tough this year with the amount of rainfall we had and our lack of heat.
And that was nothing that we were going to be able to change in the short term, that's for sure. Okay, guys, it is bottom of the hour. We want to touch on the news, but when we come back, I have some questions for you, especially as we think about seedbed prep and what we want to be planning ahead as we go into 2025, some of those types of things. And of course, we want to hear just a little bit of a progress report as far as how the crop looks and harvest, etc. So stay tuned. We'll get that overall look at what's happening in North Dakota agriculture when we return. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. And I got to tell you, it feels like it's a lot out of focus because we have quite a day where we've got two guests and Justin and I, and everybody's remote. And our poor sound engineer, Addison, must be having the time of his life pressing every button you can imagine to keep us all live and going. So thank you for sticking with us in the chaos that is Weather and Ag in Focus today. Okay, so Larry and Jason are joining us. They are agronomists in different parts of the state, and they always have a discussion on Twitter called hashtag Tillage Tuesday. And I had a listener question get sent to me. Jason, you're going to have to be the one to start this, because the question was, why does Tillage Tuesday exist? How did this get rolling?
I don't know when it did or how it did, but it just did. And it's funny because Larry and I are good friends. We chat quite a bit about different things. And we've taken this very opposite position, because that's how it seems to be particularly on social media. You either are kind of one or the other. And strip till's kind of that in between that everybody can kind of go, yeah, you know, I kind of think about that. But it morphs into all kinds of different things. And actually, I don't know if Larry was on it today, but there was already a discussion that was going on today about some stuff. And it gets off the rails, and that's what's kind of fun. But everybody brings up good points, and you can kind of see other people's viewpoints, and that's what I like about it.
Yeah, it brings up those viewpoints of why you would want to use certain methods of tillage and implement tools. But yet, Larry, you stick with it. Because, you know, you're not the curmudgeon that you might want to portray on X, but what's your take on Tillage Tuesday?
Well, for starters, Jason is the one that started it with a remark, and I couldn't help myself, so I returned fire, and it all kind of morphed into Tillage Tuesday. But the great thing that came out of it was we have these discussions, and they're good discussions to have. What system is going to best work for your operation? You know, I guess part of my drive with the no-till, I don't like to see fields blow, and we can run into some of that. And sometimes you can be running a pretty much a no-till system if you don't have a lot of residue. It can move. I will be the first to admit to that. But I think at times we're not managing things maybe quite as well as we should. And I think it's a good platform for the discussion. I prefer when people keep it civil though. Occasionally it gets a little out of hand, and I don't care for that, to be honest with you. There's no reason everybody's opinion can't be ooh, get my finger up, can't be looked at. So we just rolled out of one evening, and then of course Jason, you know, came at me head first, and I thought, oh no, we're not letting this go. So
so I do agree with you that I think this all started as a way of a little bit in jest, but there are a lot of folks that follow the two of you just to hear your opinions and what you might think about what's going on in the field on a regular basis. Okay, so yet another question that just came in. What is Jason's favorite tillage tool, and why is it a pro-till? And then you have to explain you now have to explain what a pro-till is.
So if there's anything of the consistency of Tillage Tuesday, it has been Larry's stance on vertical tillage, okay? And for someone who works in the seed industry, I can see why. And a pro-till is essentially, it's a speed disc. Maybe your parents or grandparents had like the old discs that were fairly large disc blades and things like that. These are much smaller, angled in the front, angled in the back, and they're built for speed. Quick till, pro till, you go with the Jokers, Lemke's, you go different brands and things like that because they're fast, and most farm operations are fairly large size. So there are some advantages to them, and there's some disadvantages to them. Probably the biggest disadvantage is it will pulverize the ground, and it is much more susceptible to blowing. If you are seeding shallow seeded crops like canola, you can dry out the top 2 inches, no problem with that. So actually, if I was to pick a tool, it is probably still a chisel plow, because you will get more mixing and break stuff up so you don't turn it into powder.
So, okay, Larry, we know that Jason's, his stance on what's going on over there. You and I have had conversations where we maybe need to take oxyacetylene and chop up some of those pro-tills where people get a little overzealous with them. But give me your stance on that as far as why you want to make sure that people are maybe not using a pro-till but following better guidelines within their soil structure.
Well, I mean, Jason summed it up pretty well. It's because, you know, they get out there and everybody's so concerned about speed, and I understand that with the size of the operations nowadays, but you're basically creating an environment that you can move, make your topsoil susceptible to movement. I don't think it's a good practice. I don't think when you're driving down I-29 or I-94 and it's the springtime and it looks like you're in a blizzard, but it's soil moving off a field, I think that doesn't set a good example for agriculture as well. I would tend to agree with Jason if I prefer a field cultivator or something, just something so we're not moving soil. The Red River Valley is blessed with a lot of topsoil, and Bridget knows this. As you move west, we have less and less of it, and we don't need to be eroding it off. So, yeah, I don't like the high speed discs. They sure are popular, but I don't think they're terribly helpful. To be honest with you, sure, there's people agree with me, but that's my stance on it.
Okay, so Larry, I've got a question though, and I know you and I both believe in the power of some of the older chemistries that are available, and I'm going to go back to like the DNAs like Sonalans, Treflans, and when I think about no-till situations, there are still ways to make those herbicides work, and would you be okay with using some tillage or heavy harrows, et cetera, in that stance, and just less potential for soil movement?
Well, yeah, I mean, of course, you know, I guess all of us, throwing Jason in there too, remember the days of the Sonalans and the Treflans and that. And I think if you're going to use that type of chemistry, if you're going to make it effective, you're going to have to do some kind of tillage. It's just would be a matter of, you know, managing the moisture and not letting it sit forever after you made the last incorporation. There's ways to work some of them in, and we're going to have to figure it out because we're going to need, on some of the crops, we're really going to need that chemistry moving forward.
Well, okay, so what's your prognosis going into next year? What would you be recommending people do as far as fall work, prepping for next spring's planting, you know, ensuring what their seed beds are going to look like? Any advice based on your moisture situation, Larry?
Good luck over a good chunk of my area trying to do any tillage. It's probably not happening right now. I would prefer that when they combine, they are doing their best to chop up the residue, and they have that in mind, and then they have a game plan in spring if they're going to maybe do some strip tillage, or if they're just going to get aggressive with their row cleaners, something on that order. But they've got to do their best to try to manage the residue. And the wheat crop will be a challenge because we had a really outstanding wheat crop in the West this year. There's going to be a lot of residue on those fields. Unless, of course, you bailed the entire field up, in which case it won't be much of a problem. Or
okay,
the residue,
so
excuse me, the straw.
The residue won't. I don't even want to ask about lighting a match to it. Let's get to that at a different time. But Jason, okay, your harvest situation is not looking as good.
No, we're very wet, and we have, I got crop left out in fields that people won't get to. I have ruts. So we're going to be in a different scenario. So we're going to try to mitigate and get rid of some of this moisture. Generally speaking, a lot of our guys will use a 2-inch spike, so there isn't a lot of disturbance. We're going to see a lot more movement, I think, going to a 4-inch beaver tail this year to open that ground up, because we're not worried about losing moisture. As wet as we are, we're going to have a gift called volunteer grain, wheat, barley, canola, as our free cover crop this year because our soils are that moist. So we're going to get a built-in cover crop of sorts, but we actually do need to dry it out, which when we get into this discussion on Twitter with Tillage Tuesday, inevitably cover crops do come up. And my situation is that I don't have anybody who is right now would have the sense to take out a drill right now because it's so wet. The last thing you want to get stuck on your farm is a drill in mud. So we have to let, you can get anything else stuck and you'll complain, but the drill is like the worst thing you possibly can. And so you're going to use a cover crop to mitigate extra moisture, or are you going to use tillage? And right, wrong, or indifferent, I think we're going to see a lot more of that this fall in our area, because if we get any moisture here in October, we are looking at a tremendous potential for preventive plant in 25.
Whew, more than where you're at right now? Wow.
Yeah, we were blessed. We were blessed with a tremendous amount, especially the central part of the county, which is where I primarily crop consult on, more so than the north and the middle were pretty quite a bit. Southern part of the county, not as much, but it's been a real joy and a treat to soil sample this fall. Lots of WD-40, lots of profanity, lots of mud, just all the stuff you don't want to have.
So, okay, Larry, cover crop. Are you seeing anybody taking an interest in cover crop if you are so dry? Are they thinking about it? Are they not even concerned about it? What's the prognosis in your region?
There are some people that are going to run a cover crop. I certainly think in situations it can be beneficial. You've got to plan for it. I would imagine we'd probably see a little less because we've simply been so dry over the last 30 days or so. I mean, some areas have caught some rain, but especially as you're west of the Missouri River, moving towards Montana, it's been pretty dry. I think you'd probably be kind of tossing your money right out the window right now if you tried to seed a cover crop, and we're getting beyond the point where it would do you any good at this point anyway. You just probably not that much season left. So,
well, as we've got just a couple moments left, I will tell you I have gotten some great questions and feedback from folks that can't wait to see what the two of you will be talking about next on Tillage Tuesday. And that's from people who are currently actively in the field doing tillage or planting cover crops. So they're happily enjoying this discussion. And Jason had mentioned strip till, which I think down the road, that's a whole different topic of conversation is strip till. We just wouldn't have time to get into all of it today. So last remarks from either one of you, as you maybe want to give any little feedback going into next year, some advice. I'm going to ask Larry to go first if there's anything you want to kind of sound off on before we end for today, and Jason can go next.
Don't use a match to manage your residue would be my advice right now. You could be managing a lot of residue over a wide area in the West, but just as you're getting your fall harvest done on your row crops, be thinking about what you're going to do next year and how you manage that residue.
Go ahead, Jason.
If you go back to last year, you can always look back and know what you should have done, but there was some places where we should have planted cover crop. If we knew we were going into edibles, if we were going into soybeans, even canola. And so there's a place for it and a fit. What I'm telling people is to be cautious. We've got some warm weather now that's dried things out. I've told people not to go into any barley fields right now. Barley fields don't have the root structure that wheat does, and those fields are a lot wetter. You go in with tillage right now, you're going to cause a problem with not only your seed bed for next year, but ruts and everything like that. And you just don't want to do that. So we still got some time. Just be patient. If you're going to do tillage, be smart about it so you don't set yourself up for – if you can do things to not have erosion this winter. Hopefully it snows this winter. That'd be nice.
That would – I think we might actually have that. And if you want to keep up on these discussions, for sure, you're going to want to follow the hashtag Tillage Tuesday on Twitter. If you're looking how to find it, you can follow me. You can follow Jason at Rock and Roll Agronomy. You can follow Larry, and we can make sure that you're involved too. Don't forget to keep an eye out for what might happen going down the road. So thanks for joining us today, guys. I really appreciate your outlooks and perspective on what's happening around the state right now.
Thanks, Bridget.
Yep. Thank you, Bridget. Larry, you have a great day. Bye.
You too, Jason. See ya.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm going to Twitter here in about 10 minutes.
Okay. All right, folks. Stay tuned. Justin and I are going to recap ag headlines as well as the weather, and we will do that right after this.
And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thanks for rejoining us on this finally Friday. It's 1:53 right now on this nice afternoon. Quick check on your currents across the region. We're sitting at near 75 degrees here in Fargo. 71 up in Grand Forks, 79, 80 degrees in Detroit Lake, 73 in Jamestown, 79 down in Wahpeton, Hillsboro coming in at 74, and around Devil's Lake, just about 70 degrees right now. So a little cooler up to the north near 70, mid-70s here across Cass County, Clay County, and upper 70s near 80 in the Southern Valley and over into Lakes Country of Minnesota. For everybody, it is shaping up to be a nice day, though, with light wind and mostly sunny skies, and we'll be running down your full forecast coming up here in just a moment. But, Bridget, I learned all sorts of great information there about tillage and no tillage. I was listening very closely to your guys' conversation, and it was interesting.
Imagine how you're going to apply that to your virtual farm operation when you're next in the game.
Plow, baby, plow.
That's right. We did have a listener call in. Greg was wondering if I happen to know where the custom combiners are at. And for the most part, I think most of them have headed back home. Wheat harvest is over, so a lot of those folks are no longer out on the road right now. So just a heads up, but if you're looking for somebody, North Dakota has a harvest hotline through the North Dakota Department of Ag, and you can always reach out to the Department of Ag to help match farmers as well as custom harvesters during the heat of the season. They're happy to help you out.
Mm-hmm. And before we jump into the forecast, why don't we hit a couple of our ag topics here for the day, one of those being the Farm Bureau Challenge finalists in Minnesota.
There is. This is coming out of Crookston. Brian Bowl, who's the owner of a North Star Lime in Crookston, he has been named a top 10 finalist in Farm Bureau's annual contest on ag innovation. And what's going to happen is he now has to go do a virtual pitch round against the other finalists. The three judges will choose four finalists, and those four finalists win $10,000. They will be announced on October 17th, and they go to the final round where they have to be at the American Farm Bureau Conference in January. They have to make their pitch live to the convention, and if they win, there's a bigger prize package at the end for them. So Brian's product that he's working with is a pelletized lime. They can use that for balancing soil pHs. It's also very good for nutrient absorption as well as crop productivity, and he's using that as lime because it's a byproduct from nearby sugar beet plant, and then he's just able to use it in a better way so it doesn't go to waste.
I see. And tell me a little bit about the South Dakota Pig Pals event.
I want you to do this. Pig Pals. This is so much fun. Pig Pals. All right. South Dakota State Fair. What they have done is they invite in students who are part of South Dakota Special Olympics, and they are paired with a 4-H or FFA student who is showing hogs at the state fair. You get the opportunity to go into the barns, meet your pig, visit with your coach, feed them, take care of them, but then you get to go to the arena, and you're going to spend time showing your hog. And so students can earn prizes. Again, yeah, if no matter what your level of ability from the Special Olympics, you get to participate in this, and we have kids in the ring that never get the opportunity to just show a hog. This time they can. That's held at the South Dakota State Fair. It's called the Pig Pals event.
Very cool. Very cool. Interesting. I'm sure that's got to be fun for kids to go do.
I think that's fun for everybody, whether you're a coach or whether you're a student participating. I think you would enjoy that tremendously.
I think so. It should be fun times down there in South Dakota. You ever been to the South Dakota State Fair?
I have not. It's held in Huron every year right over Labor Day. They have a great concert lineup, so it's one that I would like to attend.
Let's see. We got a message coming in from our live chat. Steve says it's sunny now in Jersey, but it's supposed to get windy as heck tomorrow. So, all right.
He can thank a hurricane for that.
sure can thank a hurricane. And that's crazy to think. That thing made landfall in the Panhandle or the Big Bend of Florida, and it's working its way up to New Jersey now. I mean, you talk about a big storm, and I was just running some numbers while I was listening to yours and Jason and Larry's conversation there, and so far, over 4.8 million customers without power stretching from Florida all the way up into Ohio and even Indiana. Dealing with power outages from Hurricane and Tropical Storm Helene now. And I'll have to go back and double check, but I think I saw something that Helene had actually just gotten downgraded to a tropical depression now. So it has 35 mile per hour sustained winds, which is good news. It is continuing to weaken and will eventually roll offshore. I'm sure Jay's got more questions for me in terms of what happened with Hurricane Helene, as well as a check on your full forecast for the Red River Valley. Coming up with the Jay Thomas Show, that'll be starting in a few moments. We thank you for listening today. Have a great weekend. Bridget, we'll catch you back on Monday. How about that?